Last weekend, holiday travelers ran into a perfect storm of airline troubles, crashed computers, baggage snafus, staffing problems, and a real-life winter storm in the Northeast. In hopes of staving off similar problems this weekend, bankrupt U.S. Airways is asking its employees to work extra shifts for free. And today, the federal government announced it will take over United Airlines' pension fund for many retirees. Benefits will be slashed by a third, maybe more. Airline travel is back up to pre-September the 11th levels, but in the 3 years since then, the airlines lost $21 billion. Four carriers are in bankruptcy. Two others are on the brink. Altogether, they've laid off a quarter of their employees. Many of those who have remained had to accept dramatic cuts. And while passengers enjoy low ticket prices, the frustrations with delays and cancellations and poor service continue to mount. Later in the program, we'll move from snafus to sloth as Wendy Wasserstein joins us for the sixth installment of our series on the seven deadly sins. But first, the troubles with the airlines. How close is the industry to the breaking point, and when will it look like these troubles are past, if ever? If you work in the airline industry, we especially want to hear from you. What's your company doing right or wrong? What changes would you suggest? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from his home in Marshall, Virginia, is Darryl Jenkins, a visiting assistant professor at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University and former director of the Aviation Institute at George Washington University. Good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
It's a pleasure to be with you, young man.
Let's start with today's news. What does it mean that the government, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, will take over United's pensions?
Well, United was very underfunded in their pension obligations, so the government will take it under through their insurance policy. However, payments will be cut by probably a quarter to a third to those who are already retired and those who will be retiring anytime soon.
Now, pensions are one obligation that separates the older carriers, the so-called legacy airlines, from the newer, lower-cost companies.
That's true. And in the last 10, 15 years, they changed retirement plans. They had some very generous plans for especially the pilots, which in all candor, the companies never could afford to do. And so it's kind of a judgment day for the airlines. They made too many promises that they couldn't keep. People asked for things which they shouldn't have been asking for, and the bills are coming due now.
Have those legacy carriers, it seems like a long time since any of them ever made money.
They made a lot of money during the late 1990s. Matter of fact, 1999 was the best year ever that the airlines had. The demise of these guys, though, happened prior to the 9/11, pretty much at the same time as the NASDAQ meltdown. Through irrational exuberance, prices, especially for business travelers, went up and up and up. And when the NASDAQ melted down, that was pretty much the end of that very large revenue stream. American Airlines, for example, if they would have had their current cost structure in 1998, they would have made $5 billion that year. And with this very trimmed down cost structure, where they've cut $4 billion in cost, they will still lose probably $1 billion this year.
That's hard to absorb. I mean, obviously, a lot of these companies are in serious trouble.
Yes, they are. It would not surprise me if in the next 5 years we saw all of the so-called legacy carriers in Chapter 11 at least once. The amount of debt that they are currently carrying is just enormous. Some of these guys have upwards of $20 billion in debt, and compare this with Southwest Airlines, which has less than $2 billion in debt. So that much debt makes you very unstable. It doesn't take much of a gyration in the economy that puts you under.
Now, do employees at the low-end airlines, and I'm talking about low-cost, Southwest, JetBlue, that kind of thing, do they make a lot less than their colleagues at the legacy carriers?
Well, those at Southwest Airlines make very good wages. They have a little bit more productive system, and they work a little bit harder as well. So what you want to do is ultimately get your marginal cost pretty much in line with your marginal revenue, and we've never had that with legacy carriers. So the low-cost guys, they're all hurting right now. They're making a little bit of money, not as much as they would like, but they're certainly nowhere near the same disastrous situation that the legacy carriers are facing.
Our guest is Darryl Jenkins of Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University. If you'd like to join our conversation, it's 800-989-8255. Our email address, TOTN at NPR.org. And let's talk with David, who's on the line with us from Connecticut.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good. Yeah, I'm a pilot with Continental, and I know with all that's going on in the industry right now, I am glad to say that Continental is doing much better than I think most of our competitors.
How come?
Well, we've been lean and mean, I think, for quite some time now. I think they're just trimming the fat off a lot of the other carriers, and Continental is kind of like the Southwest of the major carriers in terms of productivity and things like that. So I think things are looking up. We just had a big order today or yesterday for some new Boeing jets. So things are looking up.
Have you had to take pay cuts or cuts in benefits?
Well, they've discussed that with us, but I don't think that's going to happen. I feel confident that when the time comes, we'll remain at the pay scale that we're currently at.
So you're looking forward to the next year with some confidence?
Yeah, I think things are looking very good.
Okay. Is David right, Darryl Jenkins?
Well, Continental, amongst the legacy carriers, certainly has the lowest cost. Let's remember, though, that Continental's been through Chapter 11 twice already, and that's one of the reasons that they did. Now, in line with that, though, Gordon Bethune, who's retiring this week, who's the chairman of Continental, probably is one of the best airline CEOs that I've ever seen. So when the others were making some mistakes trying to go out and do mergers and things like this, Gordon kept a very steady hand at the helm. Also, I thought he was very good at when he came in, the employee unrest and morale at Continental was really quite low, and he was able to turn that around very quickly. So I always look at management on things like this, and Continental's had very good, steady management, and they're doing some very interesting things internationally in terms of expanding, flying places where others aren't. Very, very good airline.
Mm-hmm. David, good luck to you in the new year.
Well, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You mentioned there have been union troubles that at least contributed to some degree to the problems last weekend in Philadelphia. Baggage handlers, flight attendants, to the extent to which the sick out was organized is still in dispute. But is this something we can look forward to as people get, angry about continued cuts?
Well, getting your wages cut once, then cut by a smaller amount the next year is never pleasant. Airlines have never had that very good relationships with their labor, so that certainly is one of the things that has to change in the future. How management and how unions view each other is one of the most important things that we have to change in the future. This is a service industry, and we can't have all the disruptions that we've had. We had the meltdown of United Airlines in the year 2000. We've had some problems in the past with American Airlines, and all of these things work against you. They cut very, very much into your revenue picture, and none of these things are good. JetBlue, Southwest are fundamental businesses. They have good business plans. They have productive business plans, and over the years, these guys have found ways to get along with their employees, and I have nothing but admiration for them.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk with Tony. Tony's joining us on the line from Milwaukee.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm just kind of curious as to how prices throughout the world increase yearly, fuel prices, grocery, cars, but yet the airlines continue to remain low with their airfares. And I just don't understand how they can survive without increasing their ticket prices.
Well, that's a perfectly good question, young man. Airfares are the lowest that they've been in some 25 years that I've been watching this industry. And in real terms, if we deflate these prices to account for inflation, they're lower than they were in the 1970s. The reason why is this: the hyper-competitive environment. We saw during the 1990s Southwest expand greatly. They went all over the place. They're very strongly entrenched on the East Coast. JetBlue came along, AirTran, and some others, Frontier and Denver, very, very well-managed, low-cost carriers that put the emphasis on controlling costs, whereas the legacy carriers were more interested in maximizing revenue. And as it turned out, the low-cost guys won. With having very low cost, they were able to keep their fares very low, and they're on so many routes now that they control the pricing structure for the most part in the domestic airline industry. And their product, if you look at JetBlue, in all candor, their product's better than just about everyone's. They have brand new planes, they have nice seats, you get free entertainment, and they get a low price. And there's just no way that in a situation like that, you would go back to paying fares that you would pay in the 1990s to fly in the legacy carriers. So these guys are lean, mean, they have very good products, and they have low prices, and they're changing the everything in the industry right now.
Mm-hmm. Tony, thanks very much.
Thank you.
So long. Let's go with Neil. Neil is calling from Minneapolis.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm calling because I have quite a few disagreements with what he had said about good management and so on. A lot of the management executive staff for the airline bounce from airline to airline, reaping the bonuses right and left. In fact, we've had announcements out here about our airline that people are getting bonuses. And in fact, this round of concessions, before they started coming out, all of the airlines with the concessions, 90% of their management had already taken pay raises at just about all of the airlines.
Which airline do you work for?
I'd rather not say. We got rules.
I see. What do you do for the airline?
I'm an inspector.
You're an inspector. And, Darryl Jenkins, management good or bad?
In the low-cost guys, I like the management of those airlines, and I like the management at Continental. I think any airline, though, that has management in place, that gives themselves raises when they're cutting everybody else's wages, I think that is about one of the most insidious things that I could think of, and I know exactly which airline you work for, young man, and I'm very angry with those people for doing that. I'm very stingy in my praise of airline management. They're probably, of the 140 airlines in the United States, there's probably less than a half a dozen of them that I'm really excited about right now.
Mm-hmm. Would I be incorrect in pointing out that Northwest Airlines is based in Minneapolis?
Well, that I couldn't tell you.
Ah, oh, okay. Well,
there is one other point I'd like to suggest, though.
What's that?
And that is, right now, you're talking about Southwest and JetBlue. Southwest currently has some of the highest lower employee wages of anybody in the industry, and while they may run thin and so on, you have to look at where the maintenance is being done. Right now, the FAA allows 20 mechanics or 20 people to work under one licensed mechanic, and the FAA has virtually no oversight. The rules and laws have been changed such that third-party maintenance organizations across the U.S. and the world can work on aircraft with only one guy being licensed and certified. That allows people to send maintenance out to be worked at other places and have only one guy really signing off to work. And the fear is, over time, and I'm not saying immediately, by no means this isn't a crisis situation, but over time, the safety that all these legacy carriers built in their airlines can erode away. And that's what there is a lot of concern in the industry, and a lot of the loyalty that these carriers have had in the past has now waned away because of all the situations that have occurred since 9/11, I mean, most of the mechanic workforce is down to about 50% at all of the carriers in the nation. So that's kind of the last thing I'd like to say, and thank you.
All right, Neil. Thanks very much. We appreciate the call, and have a Happy New Year.
You too.
Okay. Darryl Jenkins, the same to you. Happy New Year.
And to you too.
Darryl Jenkins, a professor at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach, Florida, joined us by phone from his home in Northern Virginia. We'll be back with more about the airlines and their continued troubles after a short break. We'd also like to hear more of your questions by phone or by email. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the current troubles in the airline industry and what that means for the companies and their passengers. You're invited to join us. If you fly, have you seen the airline's troubles reflected in your travel experiences? If you work in the industry, tell us about your job and your feelings about it and whether they have changed. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Scott McCartney. He writes the Middle Seat column for the Wall Street Journal, and he's joining us from the studios of Cake Mix Productions in Dallas, Texas. It's good to have you on the program.
Good to be with you, Neil.
What are the major ways in which all of these various problems show up for passengers?
Well, the first and most obvious way are late flights. In airline, there's so many moving parts to an airline that when one employee group, one piece of the watch, if you will, breaks down, then the whole operation gets off track. So flights are late, bags are lost or misplaced or late, consumer complaints rise, cancellations rise, the operation just disintegrates very quickly.
As we saw in what happened in the Northeast over the Christmas weekend, part of the problem was a computer glitch at Calm Air that all of their pilots' assignments were lost.
Yeah, and that's hard to understand that there weren't better backup systems. That's an enormous failure, and I think there will be a big investigation looking into how the entire airline could shut down.
Mm-hmm.
That's happened before from time to time. American Airlines had a problem that lasted several hours, but not the entire airline shut down for a couple days.
But as airlines get closer to the edge economically, are they going to spend the money for backup systems that would have prevented something like that?
Well, I think they have to. The cost of a shutdown is enormous, and at the same time, the cost of technology generally has declined. You can get better and better systems, cheaper and cheaper. So I don't think in this case it's necessarily just being cheap with your computers.
Does anybody rank airlines by reliability?
The U.S. Department of Transportation every month puts out a consumer guide showing. Several categories, on-time standings, they now list cancellations, they list the flights that have the worst record of the month, those that are late more than 80% of the time, they list consumer complaints, baggage handling, and which airlines bump the most passengers.
And if you went to their website, could you see that?
Yeah, at dot.gov, and then do some navigating through there. I don't have the exact website in front of me, but it's a very useful tool. I use it quite a bit in my reporting.
Mm-hmm. Now, are we also seeing a change in the structure of the airlines? It seems the hub structure isn't as dominant as it used to be.
Well, it's not. There's a good deal more point-to-point flying with the discount carriers. We've had too many hubs in this country, and I think one of the good things that's coming out of all this turmoil is that the number of hubs is actually shrinking. American has downsized in St. Louis. US Air is essentially closing its Pittsburgh hub. Delta's closing its Dallas hub. These were operations that just couldn't be sustained. And so that's probably a good thing for the industry. And point-to-point flying in markets where there is the traffic, it's a great thing for travelers to not have to make a connection.
Yet some people in small cities have lost their service altogether, and other places just find it really hard to get home.
Well, in the smallest cities, that's true. There is a government program that came about with deregulation many years ago that guarantees service to small communities. And so I know there's been a lot of concern that if U.S. Airways fails, for example, that some small towns will lose service. I just don't think that's the case. Other carriers will fill in. The government will subsidize service. And some of these small cities are getting service from affiliate airlines that aren't actually owned by U.S. Air but are flying under contract to U.S. Air, and they'll just find another airline to feed.
Mm-hmm. Let's get some listeners back in on the conversation, and Jan joins us from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi.
Hi, Jan.
How are you today?
Very well, thank you.
Well, I'm a retired United Airlines employee.
And you just had your pension cut.
I did. As of today, I heard it on your show.
I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad tidings.
Well, I can't say it's a surprise because I've been getting mailings from the company, but my point is that I was a 36-year employee. I gave back several times part of my salary, and in return, I received worthless stock because we, as you know, were an ESOP.
Mm-hmm.
And we were employee-owned, and we all put in 8.6% of our salaries for this stock.
ESOP is Employee Stock Ownership Program.
Right, yeah. Right. And I received this year a check for less than $200 for over $17,000 of what I have given back.
Hmm.
And my question to your analyst is, why isn't someone looking into executive packages and these golden parachutes that all the airline executives get down to vice presidents, and there are lots of them, and they make so much more money than any of the people who really do the work. We're the ones who go to work every day. We're the ones who talk to the public, face the public, and we've given back more and more and more, and they take and take and take.
Scott McCartney.
Well, I think Jan's right. We report on this all the time. We watch it very closely. It's also not unique to the airline industry. This is a endemic situation in U.S. corporate life these days. I think the United ESOP turned into a huge fiasco. It was a very bad investment sold to the employees by previous management. And Jan's right. The management that sold them the ESOP walked away with millions of dollars.
Millions of dollars for poor management. And that's what I guess I don't understand, why we reward these executives who walk away after 2 or 3 or 4 years and their poor business decisions have cost us my pension, part of my pension that I worked for, and all the employees that are still at work who may have 20 or 25 years in with the company. What are they supposed to do?
It's
no guarantee for them of anything.
Hmm. I don't know. It's the board of directors of a company that awards the executive compensation. I think there have been efforts in the past to go back and try and get some money back from executives through bankruptcy court and things like that. But, there's this just enormous gap between how executives in this country are rewarded for their work and how workers are rewarded. And airlines would tell you that they have to be competitive with their executive compensation if they're going to get good managers. And some of them do have very good managers who could make a lot more money elsewhere. In the earlier segment, Neil from Minneapolis, he just lost his CEO. Richard Anderson went to United Healthcare because he could make a whole lot more money at United Healthcare.
Hmm. And that I understand. But in an industry that is struggling, and these legacy carriers that are struggling, why isn't someone looking at what's going on at the top of these companies? Because those poor people at US Air, and I don't condone what they did last weekend, but they've had it. And they're the ones who show up every day and have to face a plane load of people where you have too many people, every flight is oversold. Do you see where I'm coming from?
I do, Jen, and I'm not sure that there's any solution for it, or that I can give you any solution for it. But we empathize with your situation, and thank you for the call. I feel embarrassed to wish you a happy new year, but a happier new year.
Well, thank you. I'm sure it'll be a good one anyway.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks very much for the phone
call. Bye.
Let's talk now with David. David's calling from Detroit.
Yes. Hi. My wife and I buy between 6 and 10. Trips a year or tickets a year, and we were very loyal to Northwest Airlines, which has closed all of its offices throughout the country. We always racked up a lot of miles, and there was customer loyalty, just like I have a customer loyalty to my Pontiac dealership with whom I've been dealing for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there are almost no leniencies any longer if there's any questions or concerns or what have you, and so therefore people like me are now finding the smaller carriers more attractive because that customer loyalty doesn't exist any longer. And I don't want to go on the net all the time, though I do go on the net, but my customer loyalty, I spend a fair amount of money, and I am almost forced to go elsewhere because I'm not getting the kind of care that, I feel I should get, especially, if I buy those amount of tickets, throughout the year. So
Thank you, David, for the phone call. We appreciate it. And we're hearing that from former employees, from employees. You know, there's no loyalty from customers. What's going on?
Well, I think people are realizing they can get better prices and better service from some of the discount airlines. I think another interesting thing is that the value of a frequent flyer mile has really gone down. And I think airlines have done this to themselves by making it harder and harder for people to redeem miles for good trips and things like that. They've really devalued the frequent flyer mile, which was a great generator of customer loyalty. So you don't have that anymore. The web makes it so much easier to check prices of any airline rather than calling different carriers or relying on your travel agent who might have had a loyalty to a particular carrier. It's a wide open market there, and people are finding better service, better deals elsewhere.
Let's talk with Melody. Melody's calling from Oklahoma City.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I don't work for the airline industry. Of course, I fly several times a year, and I haven't had any problems, and I'm glad to say that. But I have to say I come from the other end of the spectrum as your two callers ago. My problem lies with a lot of the union deals. I have a friend that flew for Southwest Airlines. She was a pilot, only flew a couple days a month, for which she received $20,000, I think, a month. Now, that seems a little outrageous to me, and every time I hear a cry from one of the unions saying, oh, my gosh, we've got to go from $25 an hour down to $20, I just want to say, and what about the people making $5 an hour? You're not getting any sympathy from me.
Mm-hmm.
I think therein lies the problem. There are far more employees that they're spending money on in unions than there are managers getting those golden parachutes, who also shouldn't be getting them, I agree, but I really think it's the other way that all the money is going.
Is that right, Scott?
I think, like anything, there's certainly some truth in all that. One of the big problems the airlines have had is that in the good days, unions carried tremendous clout, and as Daryl mentioned before, they asked for enormous pay raises and pay rates that just weren't sustainable. Airline executives basically had to agree to that or face a strike that could bankrupt the airline in good times. So when unions were dictating the contract terms, and, you know, at United, there was a long period where the employees owned the company. So, you know, who was managing the company? The employees were. The unions and employees, I think, bear a good deal of responsibility for all this. And all you had to do was look at Southwest, which was growing like crazy. Growth is great for employees because they step up very quickly in pay and seniority. And Southwest for 30 years has been profitable, and other airlines thought they could do it a different way, and it turns out they couldn't.
Mm-hmm. Melody, thank you. And continued good flying in the new year.
Thank you.
We're talking about the troubles afflicting the airline industry. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. Jason is with us from Detroit.
Hello, Neil.
Hi.
How's it going?
Oh, not too bad.
Well, that's good. It's not going quite as well for us in the low-cost carrier industry either. They're asking we pilots for concessions, and we've already given our management team the lowest cost per available seat mile that there is, and we're still losing money. And I'm wondering if it's possible even to make money with an airplane, because it takes so many millions of hours to build one, so much infrastructure to maintain it. Was deregulation the right way to go? And also, maybe it's just too expensive to fly anywhere. Our flights are almost always full. I can hardly even jump seat on my own airline. Yet how are we still losing money? I don't understand.
Scott McCartney?
Well, a couple things in that. One is it's the people all around the airline make a lot of money. Boeing makes money selling the airplane. The people who lease it to the airline make money. You know, a lot of people make money off of airlines, even when airlines don't make money. Right now, there's overcapacity in this country, and until, you know, that is resolved, and it may never be resolved, that just may be the state of the airline industry, there are too many empty seats, and so airlines cut the prices to get people to fill seats. And sometimes they can't make money, as is the case now when oil prices are high, with really low fares. I think, you know, one of the really interesting things about the airline industry, from Jason's perspective, is that when you sign on at an airline, you sign on for life. Because of the seniority system, it's very hard to change companies. You or I, Neil, could change companies and not take a huge step back in pay, but that's not true in airlines. So people who signed on to United and thought it was golden forever, 30 years into their career, found out otherwise. And if you pick the right airline, if you happen to pick Southwest or right now JetBlue or some other carrier, you're doing very well financially. And if you pick somebody else who's struggling, you're having a tough time.
Jason, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Neil. Bye.
So long. And let's see if we can get in Jim. Jim's calling from Minnesota.
Yes. Hi, Neil. And I was curious. I'm just about to enter the airline industry, sort of in a behind-the-scenes role, and eventually hoping to work towards management, towards a management spot. And what I'm hearing now is that a lot of the feeder airlines, like Masaba for Northwest or some of the others, are really picking up more of the slack, and that the big legacy carriers are hoping to save money by essentially giving more business for point-to-point and smaller flights to the feeder airlines, and that hopefully over the long term that'll help kind of bring the industry back up. And I was just wondering if that had been your guest's observations or if that's more a pipe dream that I'm hoping for.
Yeah, I mean, is that right? And is he just a dreamer for...
Well, Jim, I'd question your career choice. I'm not sure why anybody would want to go into this industry right now, except for those of us who love to fly. But you're right that right now the bigger airlines are feeding more business to the regional feeders. I think that's cyclical. I think that could change in the future if the economy improves, things get back on a better footing. Then those airlines are going to want to claim those routes back. At the same time, they've also been squeezing the contracts, just like everybody else is taking cuts. They've been regional airlines were making money, were more profitable before, and now they're having a tougher time because they're getting squeezed by the host airline trying to get lower costs.
Jim,
be careful.
You may want to get in touch with the Wall Street Journal and offer to write the middle seat column for a lot less money than the current occupant.
That's going to be my next approach.
Okay, Jim. Good luck in the new year. Bye-bye. Scott McCartney is the current occupant of the middle seat column of the Wall Street Journal. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Good to be with you.
Scott McCartney joined us from the studios of Cake Mix Productions in Dallas, Texas. When we come back from a short break, Wendy Wasserstein joins us to celebrate her deadly sin and to tell us about the book that has reshaped her life, Sloth, and how to get it. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.